Morning, Chief Justice Steele, Justice Berger, Justice Holland. Bruce Hudson on behalf of the appellant, plaintiff below, the estate of Donald Young. With me at council table is Carrie Wong, also of my office. May it please the court, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. I think a brief summary of the facts of the case below would put this case into proper perspective. The appellant, Donald Young, was a passenger in one of two vehicles that was involved in an intersection collision at a red light controlled intersection. His wife was the driver of his car, and Catherine Schur, the appellee, was the driver of the other car. This is basically, the case against Mrs. Young, the driver of my client's car, settled out of court prior to this trial. So, in effect, the case was at trial, Mr. Young's estate versus Catherine Schur, and the jury was informed that the other defendant had settled out prior to trial. There are two basic arguments that I'd like to present. First, when an innocent party is injured in an accident where at least one of the defendants must have been at fault, then a verdict where neither of those defendants is found to be negligent results in an innocent party not receiving justice.
What was your proof with regard to the car that had the green light?
Plaintiffs had the only expert witness that testified as a traffic reconstruction expert, Mr. Shirky. Mr. Shirky based his opinion on the forensic evidence of photographs of the accident site, which included the juxtaposition of the two vehicles immediately after the impact, prior to them being removed. It showed the length and location of the skid marks of the defendant's vehicle. And perhaps most importantly in this case, it showed, and there was the whole site was surveyed by a land surveyor, and it showed, among other things, the Wilmington Trust building that was on the defendant's right side as she was approaching the intersection. He took the sworn testimony of the defendant, who said she was driving 30 miles an hour prior to hitting her brakes, and using that information and the forensic evidence in the photographs, he was able to plot her point of perception of the young vehicle in order to have hit her brakes at that point and for the brakes, for the skid marks to have lasted as long as they did. What he was able to show was pointing out where that point of perception would have been on the plot of the accident, on the diagram. It was impossible for her to have seen the young vehicle coming at a right angle, which is what she said was the reason she hit her brakes.
But your expert concluded that Schur ran the red light.
Yes.
And she testified she had a green light.
Yes.
And in the first interrogatory, the first and second interrogatory, the jury concluded that Schur was not negligent.
That's correct, yeah.
Now, in looking at that in and of itself, in light of the fact that the Young estate settled with the other driver, what do we do with the fact as far as looking at whether this was reversible error when the jury's first two questions focused on Schur, and in answering those first two questions, the jury concluded Schur wasn't negligent?
Well, I think what that demonstrates, Your Honor, at the least, is confusion on the part of the jury. The jury instructions from the judge were I'm sorry, if I can just point to that.
Well, no, that was the purpose of my question. They started with sure. So to the extent you're arguing there was confusion, it might have been when they answered questions 3 and 4, but when they looked at the sheet, the first thing they had to decide was whether sure was negligent. And the purpose of your trial was to recover against sure. And my question really is, they answered that before they got confused, hypothetically. So what do we do with that?
Well, I think that there's a couple things hanging out there that we'll never be able to determine. And one is, what was the effect on the jury, the real effect on the jury, of the knowledge that Defendant Young, plaintiff's husband, the driver for a car, had settled. Now, there was an instruction that they were to disregard that and not let that impact their finding, but that would there was really no other conclusion that I could come to other than that they felt sympathy for the wife, the widow of the deceased, because she was driving and felt that, well, they've already settled, so we won't make her feel any worse by reaching a verdict that she was negligent. That's the only, and which is, of course, contrary to the weight of the evidence. There was testimony, in addition to the plaintiff's expert, that the defendant's version of how the accident happened leading up to it was impossible. She could not have been braking in response to seeing having a green light and seeing the other car, the young vehicle, approaching. There was also testimony.
I'm confused a minute, Mr. Hudson. I may have misunderstood you, but I thought you said a finding that Barbara Young was not negligent was contrary to the weight of the evidence. Did you mean to say that?
In following up on the question by Justice Holland, that what difference would it make if they already found defendant sure not negligent? What difference would it make in this? And I think the difference is that again, there was testimony from two witnesses, the police officer and the plaintiff's expert, that this accident could not have happened. Somebody had to run a red light,
right,
and it was as simple as that. So one or the other had to be negligent. For whatever reason, they may have held both weren't negligent, and even if they had already concluded on the weight of the evidence that defendant sure wasn't negligent, it still is contrary to the weight of the evidence then to say that defendant Young was not negligent.
Okay, that's what I wanted to get straight.
And again, the only evidence.
Can I interrupt for a second here?
Yes, ma'am.
Was the jury told you have to find one or the other negligent?
I'd like to read what the jury was told, because I think this does enter into the deliberations and the.
You're going to answer the question.
I'm sorry?
You're going to answer my question now?
Yes.
Okay.
The jury was told this in the instructions. Quote, your deliberations, however, must determine whether Catherine Shore, Barbara Young, or both of them were negligent, and whether that negligence was the proximate cause of the injuries to Donald Young. So they were told in the instructions.
They weren't told directly that you must find one or the other negligent.
That's as direct as I can, in terms of what they were told by the judge.
Did you agree to the verdict sheet or the interrogatories to the jury?
Yes. Yes.
Did you request an instruction along the lines that Justice Berger mentioned?
My recollection, and Mr. Ferrer can correct me if I'm wrong, is that this particular page was the result of collaboration by the two attorneys with the judge.
So you agreed to that instruction?
Yes, I agreed to this instruction, and it's my position that the jury's verdict is contrary to this instruction. It says, again, must determine whether Catherine Shore, Barbara Young, or both. So it's you determine one or the other or both. That's my interpretation, and I would suggest that that's the interpretation of a layman and a juror as to what they were being told. And but, that's not what they did.
But as Justice Berger said, I'm probably about to say the same thing she was going to say. They weren't, though, told that you have to find one of the other negligent because the facts of the accident are inconsistent with anything other than someone's negligence.
But that additional information was not given to them because of the reason why you would have to. But, again, I fall back that this statement says you do have to find one or the other or both.
Well, but the way the verdict sheet's constructed, that doesn't necessarily follow.
I have to agree with Your Honor.
And can I get to another kind of tangential point along the same lines? Isn't it possible, even though we know that somebody ran a red light, so if we could determine who that was, we would know that the person who ran a red light was negligent, right? Okay. But let's say we can't determine from the evidence who ran a red light. We know somebody did, but we can't determine it because there's conflicting evidence and there's nothing that the jury finds that's particularly compelling about either side's argument as to who was in the right and who wasn't. Isn't it possible, as a matter of legal theory, to have a verdict of no negligence by either party because no negligence has been proven as to either party?
I would agree with that, Your Honor. I guess I would differ in terms of what the jury did under this situation. The only evidence that was presented was that one of them had to be okay by both the police officer and
right,
the
and
only
that's
expert.
What I was starting with is that we've got a situation where we know one of the two parties had to be negligent. We don't know which one. And the case goes to trial, and the trial and the evidence is conflicting. One side says it was me, or one side said it was the other side said it was yours. So the jury says, well, I'm not convinced by either side's argument. I don't think the evidence preponderates on one side or the other. Who's got the burden of proof here? And based upon who's got the burden of proof, you know, we say you didn't meet the burden. Isn't that a legally consistent way to deal with this kind of conflicting evidence?
From a juror's standpoint, I could understand that, and then my position would be, but if that is their verdict, that neither side was negligent, which is what their verdict was, not that they couldn't decide, and it wasn't a hung jury. 12 people said nobody was negligent.
Right.
But and again, that's so contrary to the weight of the evidence that's my argument.
Okay, but see, that's where I'm having trouble following the argument, because what I'm suggesting, and you're free to disagree with me, but what I'm suggesting is that when you've got the equivalent of a he said, she said, arguably the jury can say, well, I'm not convinced by either side, because I find the evidence pretty much equivalent in terms of believability and the weight of it and all that. So I'm going to resort back to who had to prove something to me, the jury. And the who had to prove was the plaintiff. So I'm saying, well, you didn't prove anything to my satisfaction, to a preponderance of the evidence, so I'm finding no negligence. Why wouldn't that be a legitimate jury verdict?
I guess, Your Honor, for the reason that the authorities that have held in the way that I'm requesting the court to hold, that when there's an innocent party, plaintiff, and that's uncontroverted in this case, nobody
right.
has alleged Mr. Young was negligent. He's the only innocent party, and when there's two defendants, it's not an unavoidable accident, and the great weight of the evidence is that somebody had to be negligent, that the light wasn't malfunctioning, the trooper was there within a minute of the accident. The only evidence, and frankly, this is the only thing that Mr. Ferrara and I agreed on at trial in closing, and that somebody had to be negligent. So that was the one thing that was not really an issue. It was a question as to who was negligent.
All right. But so what you're saying is that as a matter of justice, when you've got an innocent party, somebody's got to be found negligent. And if a jury says neither one of you is negligent, then the case has to be retried.
Under the weight of this evidence in this case, with the facts being what they are, that's my position, Your Honor. Of course, that wouldn't always be the position if the facts were more evenly balanced. I noticed I need to sum up.
Well, you can save your 4.5 minutes for rebuttal if you want.
I would like to do that, although I haven't yet addressed the other issue.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Please, the court. Good morning. I'd like to pick up, if I may, where the questioning left off, because the issues raised by the court are the exact issues that were raised in the brief that we prepared both below before Judge Cooch and here for this court. It seems that there are two issues here. One is the jury could have come to the conclusion the jury came to simply because the jury concluded the plaintiff hadn't met its burden of proof. I disagree with one of the facts that Mr. Hudson responded to in addressing Justice Holland's question. Shirky never said that he could say that Catherine Shore ran the light. He was unable to determine that. What he did say was, in his opinion, she seemed to be responding to something other than the light, although he could never determine what that was. Her testimony was there was a flash from the car. She didn't necessarily have to see the car. She saw the lights of the car. She testified, as did her two witnesses, that she had the green. As you know, Barbara Young testified that she didn't know what happened. This
was in the record where they were looking at the skid marks on the road, and he, the expert, was giving the opinion that, in his view, it was probably attributable to something other than the light. But he didn't make a definitive, unequivocal statement that she had a red light.
That is correct. But the other thing that might be of some help is that the jury could easily have just completely disregarded his testimony. As I questioned him, and I don't know what you know of his background, but he's a former FAIR team police expert witness. Reconstructionist. He is not an engineer nor a physicist, and that became pretty clear pretty quickly in his testimony. So the jury could have easily disregarded whatever he said. Who knows? But what makes this case an odd case, because Mr. Hudson keeps saying, well, we have an innocent victim here. And if you have an innocent victim with two people who, one of whom had to be negligent, there's an injustice perpetrated upon that individual, and there's a case that he found that says that. But that's not this case. What happened in this case that I suggested in my brief and I suggest now that created the unusual problem is that the jury knew that Barbara Young had settled. And that was very obvious by what they did with the verdict sheet. It came out very, very quickly, within a matter of a handful of minutes, and answered questions 1 and 2. But their note is significant because the note says, now that we've answered 1 and 2, although they hadn't told us what the answers were yet, now that we've answered question 1 and 2, is it even necessary for us to answer question 3 in light of the fact that we know she settled? That's a bit of a paraphrase. The first part is pretty much of a quote. But in light of the fact that we know the defendant settled, Barbara Young settled, do we need to continue on? They were told to continue on, and it was many hours later that they came back and with the verdict that she wasn't negligent either. Now, the suggestion that the plaintiff makes is, well, that can only be a product of jury confusion. I disagree. It could be one of two other things, more likely, I would argue. One is that they concluded the plaintiff didn't prove its case. And two, they knew that Barbara Young was the wife of the decedent. She testified very emotionally. She cried throughout her testimony, as did her daughter. And it's just as likely to conclude that this jury said, what difference does it make what we decide as it relates to her negligence, since she's really not even in the case anymore? She's already settled. Why saddle this lady with the rest of her life believing that she killed her husband? It's really a non-issue as far as we're concerned, although I appreciate it was on the verdict sheet. So it's impossible to know what they decided. Did they decide no proof?
Well, how is that last scenario you described consistent with the judge's instruction that they shouldn't take the settlement into consideration whatsoever?
Well, he tells them that they can't consider the settlement, but they also know that that she has settled the case, and they've already been told that through both parties that one of the two of them is negligent. We agree with that. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know what they concluded
well,
in
let's
that.
Let's go back to the record on the interplay between the judge's instruction and the verdict sheet. You know, Mr. Hudson read to us the quote from the record about the instruction to the jury, which he reads as saying, you have to find one or the other or both to be negligent. Let's assume that's a fair reading. It also appears to be inconsistent with the verdict sheet, which seems to suggest you could find them both not negligent, as the jury did. Does the record reflect, or do you recall, any conversation with the judge saying, you're going to tell the jury to find one or the other or both negligent, but yet the verdict sheet gives them a choice to find both not negligent? We have to sort this out somehow.
No, the only time that came up, and I have a different recollection as to how the verdict sheet and the instructions were prepared. I didn't contribute at all to them. Mr. Hudson prepared all of that.
I take it the prayer conference is not on the record.
Is not on the record? I would think it would be, Judge, but I'm not. Now that you ask me that question, I can't be positive.
Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't.
Yeah, I just don't remember for sure. I will tell you, though, that after it was all over and we were arguing the new trial motion before Judge Cooch, he did say, maybe I should have made it clearer that it was had to be one or the other. So that's the only time that I recall it coming up was not in the prayer conference, but in the argument relating to the motion for new trial.
Can we go back for a minute to the rule that Mr. Hudson would have us follow, which is if the clear or great weight of the evidence is that someone was injured as a result of someone's negligence, then as a matter of law, someone must be found responsible for that accident, or words to that effect. Is that Delaware law?
No.
Should it be Delaware law? If not, why not?
Well, actually, I was wondering what we were going to be arguing here today, and I thought the court was concerned that Delaware hasn't come down on this and maybe is wondering if they should. And if the court concludes that they should, it shouldn't be this case.
Gee, what a surprise.
And the reason I argue that is because the problem we have here is the problem that both you and Justice Berger focused on, which is we start with, we have to give great weight to the jury verdict. The jury could have concluded a lot of different things, but they never suggested they were confused. They didn't, as Mr. Hudson points out, hang. What they said was, we immediately conclude Catherine Shore is not negligent.
I understand what you said correctly, let's just examine for a moment Mr. Hudson's contention that the great weight of the evidence is that someone was negligent in a way that caused the accident. If I understand you correctly, you said that Barbara Young testified she didn't know whether she had a red or a green light or
right.
Basically how the accident happened.
That's correct.
And then Shore testified, I had a green light.
Shore said she had a green, and her two witnesses said they had a green, albeit the second witness testified by deposition and was not as clear.
Now,
but that was the evidence from that we presented. They presented the evidence that the Cherokee presented that she braked for something, but it wasn't. He couldn't say for sure it was the light. And Young testified she didn't know what she had. The only other witness that testified of any significance with regard to the light Corporal Mason, I believe he's a corporal, from the Newcastle County Police, who happened to be on his way to a checkpoint roadblock with the Newport Police Department and was behind Young. He said, I got there before the dust settled and her light was red, but he couldn't say whether it was red when she went through it. That was the evidence. So it was sufficiently confusing. But again, I made the argument at the time, as did Mr. Hudson, one of them had the red, one of them had the green. And that's always been our position. But, of course, they're always instructed that openings and closings from the lawyers are not evidence.
Well, I'm going to assume both counsel are familiar with the Maryland Court of Appeals decision in Dennard. And the Maryland has adopted a rule for circumstances similar to this. Why shouldn't we adopt the Maryland rule?
Well, again, the problem comes to the plaintiff still carries the burden of proof. They still got to be able to prove that somebody was negligent.
Did you know the Maryland rule?
I thought the Maryland rule was that in a situation like this, one had to, if there were two people that were alleged to be negligent, one of them had to be.
No.
Well, then
the Maryland rule is that if an accident could have occurred only with a negligent party causing it, the plaintiff has the burden not only of establishing that negligence by someone caused the accident, but also is responsible for proving who was actually negligent. And that when the jury finds no one negligent under those circumstances, the court doesn't interfere with that jury verdict. It's sort of a confirmation of the evidence in equipoise doctrine. It's the exact flip of what Mr. Hudson would have.
Oh, well, then I'm in favor of that.
Yeah, well, I thought you might. Today.
And
today
I appreciate it. Today I am.
I understand that. Well, if we adopt any rule at all, should it be that rule? I mean, you're a defendant today. You may be a plaintiff tomorrow.
I know that. I appreciate that, and I'm trying to think ahead. But the problem, the thing that makes that rule make sense is the burden of proof issue. You've always got to wrestle with the burden of proof issue. And if we can't look behind the verdict and say, is this why they decided it? Did the plaintiff prove it or not prove it? And therein lies the problem. For example, there was testimony in this case, in Judge Cooch's opinion, he said that Mr. Young died from injuries sustained in the accident. We never got to that point, but I made a motion for a directed verdict on damages because they never presented any medical testimony to link the two together. So the plaintiff still always has to have the burden of proof. Hopefully, if I'm the plaintiff in a case where this rule eventuates here.
Well, let's think about how the rule would apply in this case where you have two choices. And in your opening statement, Mr. Hudson's opening statement, you said one of them has to be negligent. In this particular case, if they answer the first two interrogatory or the first interrogatory no, isn't the logical implication that you have to answer the next one yes? And why shouldn't the form be set up that way?
You mean no as to negligence and yes as to proximate cause, or no as to negligence and yes as to the other driver?
In my hypothetical, with the choices we have in this case, you would tell the jury, you first have to decide if Shore was negligent. Under the circumstances of this case, if you conclude Shore was not negligent, then you must find that Young was negligent. Is that the way the rule would or should operate?
I don't think so. I think you still I think it still comes back to you've got to prove it. And basically what their expert ended up saying was, I don't know. He said he didn't know. Young said she didn't know. And Shore said what Shore said. But what Shore said, you have to keep in mind, well, Mr. Hudson didn't accept that.
The thrust of my question was, could you prove it circumstantially or inferentially? If the question was clear, and instead of saying negligent, you say, if you conclude that Shore have the green light or the red light, and they pick one, and here they say Shore had the green light, then you tell the jury, if you conclude that Shore had the green light, then you must conclude that Young had the red light.
There are a lot of permutations, Your Honor. I mean, you could say, can you conclude if Shore had the red or the green?
And that I'm trying to think how this rule would work. If we adopt the Maryland rule, and as you say, it means the plaintiff has to produce evidence, the question is, if the evidence is somebody had the green light and somebody had the red light, at the end of the case, should the special interrogatories focus the jury on making that factual determination, who had the green light? And if they conclude that one of them had the green light, then must they?
I wouldn't be in favor of that. I would phrase it differently. I would say, has the plaintiff proven or has the evidence proven to you who had the light? Because you don't want to force them into a decision that if the plaintiff didn't make its burden of proof, that they must conclude that the other person had the light. I mean, in that situation, if you did it the way you're suggesting.
No, it's a hypothetical.
I know.
Right.
But in this hypothetical, they conclude that Shore doesn't have the red light. That forces them into concluding that Shore does. That's not necessarily what the evidence showed in this case. The evidence left them to be able to say one of them had the light or neither of them had the light. You just couldn't tell. There was, as I started to indicate earlier, there was a lot of evidence from Mr. Hudson. He was aggressively taking the position that Shore ran the red.
Well, if you applied the Maryland rule, at least as I understand it, the case becomes incredibly simple because the rule carries with it the burden not only of establishing negligence that was the proximate cause of someone's injuries, but it requires you prove which person's individual negligence, if any's, caused. So if you have a situation as here where Shore says, I had a green light, Young says, I'm not sure what my light was, it's very simple for the jury to say, if part of the plaintiff's burden is to tell us by a preponderance of the evidence who was actually responsible, this evidence doesn't tell us that.
I agree with that.
And case over, under that burden of proof, neither defendant can be found negligent. Now, what's nagging at me, though, in this case, and I'm not sure that anything can or should be done about it, is the fact that the jury knew Young had equivocal evidence about whether she had a red or a green light, and she settled, which is, of course, logical for someone who can't say I had a green light to settle. Perhaps they thought this plaintiff's estate is not walking away with nothing. There's been a settlement. And we're not satisfied there's been sufficient proof to tell us who was directly the cause of this accident. So we're going to find both, the way the verdict sheet's constructed, we're going to find both not negligent.
I think that's exactly what they probably did. I mean, it's set up for that situation. To throw an extra confusion fact into it, they probably could have figured out pretty easily that Catherine Shore was Barbara Young was the beneficiary of the estate of Donald Young.
Well,
but we don't know that for sure.
Yeah, I don't know that. It's very complicated because they were also told to ignore the fact that Barbara Young had settled and treat her as a non-settling defendant. And they also, as I think both of you pointed out, no doubt had significant sympathy for her as the widow. I'd like to think they thought of her as the widow and not as the beneficiary of an estate. But maybe there was a Silas Marner or two on the jury. But I would like to think they were more concerned about her welfare than that. But
Timing-wise, and I'm not sure it's real clear, but timing-wise, that only happened right before we went down to pick the jury. Because Mike Petticone actually represented Barbara Young as a plaintiff in the case, and it was only right before we went to pick the jury that Judge Cooch said we were going to get the settling defendant instruction. So we agreed to it, and we moved on, and we went from there with it. But the problem is that for this court to overturn the verdict, you've got to conclude that somehow the jury was confused or somehow they did something wrong, and the most likely scenario is the plaintiff didn't prove the case.
Or if we adopt the rule that Mr. Hudson calls for, even though it's after the fact, simply set aside the verdict on the basis that the jury was improperly instructed on what the law ought to have been because the verdict sheet's inconsistent with what the jury should have been told under that rule.
Well, the best thing I can say about that, Justice Steele, is that it was the plaintiff's suggestion on both sets of those questions. I I understand that. So it seems to me you can't create error and then try to take.
Yeah, well, my notes say that both the instructions and the verdict sheet or the interrogatories were agreed to.
Oh, they were agreed to, but I didn't. Well, my point was I didn't prepare either one of them.
I understand.
I simply agreed to them. I didn't have any, and I still don't have a problem with them. Thank you.
Your Honor, if I may briefly respond to the court's inquiry as to the application potentially of the Maryland rule, I would analogize the Maryland rule to Delaware's joint and several liability rule in a situation such as this where there is a plaintiff and multiple defendants, and in the basis for the joint and several rule, which is, of course, the law of the Delaware forever, is that when there is an innocent party and there are two or more defendants who have been found at fault, it's unfair to hold the innocent party and give them the burden of trying to collect from a defendant who maybe can or won't pay the judgment. And it's equitable. It's only fair to place that burden on the other party who had committed a wrongful act.
Well, but that's after a finding that that's after a finding that both have committed some degree of negligence that proximately caused someone's injury.
That's correct, but I'm just saying, and I think it's analogous to the, and on the fairness issue, I think that's primarily the basis for the joint and several liability law in Delaware, and I think that same concept and philosophy would apply as to whether or not we should adopt the Maryland rule.
Well, what's your response to the question I was asking Mr. Farrar? Assuming your client had the burden, you seem to be suggesting that if you prove that one of the people was not negligent, then you don't need to go any further, that then the jury must find the other person negligent, either circumstantially, inferentially, however you want to characterize it. Is that the rule you're asking us to adopt?
In the facts of this case, yes, Your Honor, where to do otherwise would be overwhelmingly contrary to the weight of the evidence. The evidence all points to one has to be. They can't both be.
My question really goes to the nature of the evidence. One way to look at the evidence is you affirmatively have to come forward and show driver number two was negligent. And you seem to be suggesting that's not the burden you want to do it directly. You should be able to do it inferentially by showing driver number one was not negligent. If you do that conclusively, then the mirror image of that is you've established the other driver was negligent.
Your Honor, if you allow me to segue into my other argument, because it does bear on this. In this particular case, the information and the evidence that the jury was allowed to see was severely limited by the judge's ruling sustaining Mr. Ferreira's objection to exhibits, photographs taken by the investigating officer. There were 10 photographs that showed the condition, the juxtaposition of the young vehicle to the Shore vehicle. It also showed the location of all the vehicles relative to what lane they were in. There was controverted evidence as to which lane she was driving in. Her speed was an issue. The objection was that it would be prejudicial to the defendant because the fire company had cut off the top of the station wagon, and that would distort the damage. And actually, the judge initially ruled that could be cured with a curative instruction, telling them that, and then he indicated that wouldn't even be necessary before changing his mind after more argument. The police officer, in his testimony in his trial deposition, said he relied on those photographs. He's the one who selected those photographs that were the basis for his investigation and opinion. The traffic reconstruction expert did the same thing. That information was crucial, and the jury never got to see that. And I just would like to finally sum up and say that those photographs were in the pretrial stipulation. They weren't objected there, even though they were required to be. They were not objected to at the pretrial conference. and they were objected to for the first time at trial. And that is just prejudicial and unfair to the plaintiff for that evidence to be excluded.
Thank you.
That basis.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.